Hello, and welcome to On Spec. I'm your guest host, Nadine Gorey. The waters of the Mediterranean Sea are famously beautiful, sparkling blue and crystal clear. But in recent years, these waters have become a graveyard for thousands of migrants and refugees trying to make a treacherous crossing to the safety of Europe. The crisis may have dropped from the news agenda, no longer making headlines, but the numbers of those attempting to cross has not. In the spring of 2022 alone, figures from the United Nations show that 16,223 migrants and refugees reached Europe by boat. Another 2,000 are missing, presumed dead. EU attempts to push back boats in a bid to prevent the crossings have failed. Even on the day I recorded this, 100 people, men, women and children, drowned in the Mediterranean. And as we will hear, volunteer activists on rescue boats who try to save drowning people have found themselves criminalized, accused of people trafficking. For On Spec, German reporter Bart Laffert investigates how this happened. The Spy on the Med is an outstanding and deeply moving investigation that takes us quite literally out to sea.
The tube doesn't look really good.
This is me, in May 2017.
Yeah?
I'm 22, and okay. I'm sitting on an inflatable speedboat called a RIP, handing out life jackets and glow sticks.
Let them get one more life hand out, one more life jacket. You need more life jackets!
I'm in the Mediterranean Sea, a few miles off the Libyan shore. I'm reporting on a humanitarian crisis unfolding here, and the people trying to help. On the boat with me is Owen. He's a forester from Wales in his mid-50s. And Steph, a young doctor from Australia. They are some of the volunteers out today with an independent rescue operation called Sea-Watch. Around us, there's nothing but the deep blue sea. And at least 8 rubber boats coming from Libya.
Can you tell anyone who doesn't speak English that we won't leave you?
Each boat is carrying more than 100 people, and we can see some of the tubes are losing air. It's late afternoon, which means the glow sticks we are handing out could soon be their only hope to be found by larger rescue ships or the Italian Coast Guard. We know that if they're not found before they sink, they will die.
The baby was born on the boat.
Our mothership, the rescue vessel Sea-Watch 2, is out of sight and already fully loaded with people, including families with children. So Owen, Steph and I are left alone. We're trying to be quicker than the setting sun. I spent that night on the deck of the ship with those who survived. Their papery thermal blankets rustled in the wind, and I wondered how any of it could be real. I became a journalist at the height of what many people call the summer of migration in 2015. More than 1 million people from places like Syria and Afghanistan were making the long journey to my country, Germany, and elsewhere in Europe in search of asylum. Many died trying. I wanted to understand what was driving them to risk so much to get here. The next day, we're back on the deck of our fully loaded mothership. The migrants who were lucky enough to be rescued are singing and celebrating. but many others have disappeared. We soon learn that only 2 of 8 rubber boats we encountered got rescued. Some might have drifted back to the Libyan shore. Others might have capsized. People probably drowned. We would never find out. It's devastating, but we don't have much time to think about it. Soon, a crew member with binoculars shouts he can already spot some new boats in distress on the horizon.
It is a blue rubber boat. At least 50 people on board.
We all hope this nightmare will be over soon. That the European Union will step in and address what is becoming a mass grave in the Mediterranean. So volunteers and activists wouldn't be needed anymore. Since 2014, an estimated 24,000 people have died or gone missing in that sea. This is a story about the migration corridor that is, to this day, Europe's deadliest border. It's 2018, 1 year after the Sea-Watch rescue mission. I'm at a demonstration in central Vienna. Sascha Gierke is standing on a small stage on the Heldenplatz, or the Square of Heroes in English. He's a 38-year-old German activist with short brown hair. And he's here to talk about how he and his friends hope to help a mounting refugee crisis on the mat by operating a small rescue ship called the Juventa.
I was aware that the situation was polarizing.
And how they wound up facing up to 20 years in prison instead.
But really, we were just putting a simple question on the table. Do we let thousands of people die or do we try to save them? And which side do we want to be on?
Sascha was born in East Berlin, back when Germany, and indeed Berlin, was split in two. It was a time of tension and strife. Many people from communist pro-USSR East Germany were trying to cross over to the wealthier West. Some were arrested or killed in the process. Sascha grew up with socialist parents who supported the regime of East Germany, the GDR. The wall, he says, was referred to as protection, not as deterrence. Seeing the wall and the GDR as a whole collapse, that's what shaped him.
My social context was confronted with a choice. Joining the right-wing or even fascist groups of friends, or on the other hand, joining the punks, the gothies and the hip-hop.
He chose the latter. As a young man, he got involved in anti-fascist actions, like squatting empty houses. Then he became a paramedic with the Berlin Fire Department. Later, he got into what we in Germany call Fluchthilfe, or escape aid in English. In other words, helping people cross borders and reach their final destinations.
In the summer of 2015, Europe faced its biggest migration crisis since World War
II. This summer has seen a huge movement of people across Europe.
Hundreds of thousands of desperate people fleeing war.
These are people who've just arrived off boats.
German police check lorries for smuggled migrants.
They've been walking across the border.
The UN says the refugee problem in Syria is the worst since the Second World War.
This is Pegida, an anti-immigrant movement.
These events are known to attract neo-Nazis and Germany's far right. But what really...
Things got especially tense in 2015, when millions of migrants and asylum seekers were using what's known as the Balkan route in Eastern Europe.
Are you good? Oh, good, good, good. Hello, hello. Is everyone okay? Yeah?
Sascha boarded a rescue ship with Sea-Watch for the first time that year. The Italian government's rescue mission, Mare Nostrum, had just been terminated. It has saved hundreds of thousands of people coming from North Africa to European shores on small boats. But politicians argued it was attracting more migrants to make the dangerous journey. Big organizations like Save the Children and Doctors Without Borders began sending their own ships to fill the gap. Small grassroots organizations also threw their boats into the mix, including the Juventa. In 2016, the crew asked Sascha to join their operation.
I mean, in the beginning, it was a circle of friends and students, and they had this beautiful idea to buy a ship and to organize their own rescue missions.
Sascha says the Juventus crew were a bunch of young idealists who earned a reputation of being a sort of punks of the sea. Their purpose was to save lives, but also to shine a light on the governments who were failing. The ship took also more risks. Crew members were okay with disobeying rules if it meant saving lives. They didn't have donors to consult. Crew members volunteered their time. It meant morality was really the only motivation that mattered. That and being in the right place to receive people who were making this dangerous crossing.
I mean, it's called search and rescue and not wait and rescue. For us, it meant to be in the area where we expected people to cross. So this were usually between 15 and 12 nautical miles off the Libyan shore. So that's only 25 kilometers.
But there was a line rescue ships were told they couldn't cross. The border between Libya and all of Europe. Or as Sascha describes it, an invisible line in the middle of the sea.
You are there to find people in distress. And we always thought, hey, that's neither legal nor right to just wait in front of this imaginary line.
European and Libyan authorities claimed it was illegal to navigate into Libyan waters. They also argued migrants had barely left the shores of Libya, so picking them up there amounted to facilitating illegal migration. Sascha and the Juventa crew argued maritime law superseded those national laws and required them to save people in distress.
The limit was also much more of a political hurdle than a legal one. And many other rescue ships felt intimidated by this narrative around the border and were therefore reluctant to cross it.
But the Juventa did. And for almost a year, European public opinion sided with them. These young sea punks were even invited to collaborate with rescues run by European maritime authorities. All told, some 24,000 people were helped by the Juventa during its year in operation.
The people we rescued were taken and brought to the European mainland. And there were Navy vessels supporting us, sometimes even refusing to leave the scene as long as we still had the people on board. And also the Italian authorities, who were coordinating the rescues at the time, responded quite well to our calls at the beginning. But then it changed.
NGOs which rescue people in the Sea of Libya are working inefficiently with security agencies and encouraging traffickers.
Matteo Salvini has accused the charity of working in league with people smugglers.
The prosecutor told Italian television, in my opinion, those NGOs could be financed by the smugglers.
Critics accused the rescue boats of acting as a taxi service.
My task is to defend the borders of this wonderful country. We cannot become a refugee camp.
Slowly, imperceptibly at first, the mood began to tip. One of the first victims of the change were rescue NGOs. Leaders from the European border agency Frontex accused these rescuers of luring migrants from Libya into the deadly Mediterranean trap. Conservative and right-wing politicians across Europe soon followed, publicly railing against these sessions with the same unsubstantiated accusations. At the forefront of this was the Italian radical right-wing politician and interior minister-to-be, Matteo Salvini. At first, Sascha and the Juventa crew thought the media storm, like all storms, would eventually pass. But the clouds just got darker and darker. In the spring of 2017, the crew was left alone at sea with 400 rescued people on board. They were forced to send out a distress call for their own ship. Authorities are usually quick to respond to calls like these, but that day, they were reluctant to assist them. Weeks later, something even stranger happened. The Juventa had only 5 migrants on board that day, but the Italian authorities ordered the crew to deliver them to the Italian island of Lampedusa. It was an unusual procedure. Until then, the Juventa had never brought people to the Italian mainland. Instead, they handed them over to bigger rescue ships or the Italian Coast Guard to be carted off to Lampedusa or Sicily. Now they were to make that lengthy trip with only 5 people on board, even though other ships had offered to take them on? Sascha couldn't understand why. It was actually on that very evening that I was left alone with Owen and Steph on the Sea-Watch speedboat. While we handed out glow sticks to these people, and would later find out many drowned anyways, the Juventa was called to Italy, with only 5 people on board.
As far as we know, back then about 3,000 people arrived in the area of operation during those days, and the authorities left us with very little room to maneuver.
I asked Sasha what it felt like for him that day.
They threatened us with severe legal consequences. They shouted at us on the phone, and they put the board of the association in Berlin under so much pressure that even they caved in. And so we had to leave the scene in the direction of Lampedusa instead of staying with you guys in the area of operation.
The Sea-Watch mission I was part of was on the other side of the radio that day.
And I remember the radio calls with you on the Sea-Watch, and back then you said, hey, you can't leave us because there are at least 6 or 8 boats on the horizon and we are not able to help them by our own.
Yeah, I remember it was crazy. I also remember this day quite well. And no one knew what was going to happen to all these boats. It was somehow horrible.
We don't know how many people died. But what Sasha and his crew learned a few weeks later was that the Italian authorities in Lampedusa used this maneuver to bug the ship and hide little microphones on it to survey the crew's every move. It was part of an ongoing secret investigation.
We had to put it bluntly, they value the ability to bug our ship more than the lives of the people.
But things would get worse.
Die italienischen Behörden haben das Schiff der deutschen Hilfsorganisation Jugend rettet beschlagnahmt.
On the 2nd of August 2017, the Juventa was seized in the port of Trapani in Italy. Sasha was not on board, but when he heard about it, he was sure the Juventa would be back on the sea in no time. But the punk rescue ship never went on another mission. A few weeks later, Sasha received a 550-page file from prosecutors in Trapani, the same prosecutors who had ordered the seizure of the ship. The Juventa was suspected to be working with smugglers.
And it started with information from a security agency whose people worked on another NGO ship. The other NGO ship was called Hestia and was chartered by Sector Children. And this security agency, we learned then later out of the files, employed mainly former police officers, former military officers and coast guards. And one of them was named Pietro Gallo.
Pietro Gallo was an ex-policeman from Italy who was employed by a private security firm named IMI Security, the firm that worked with Save the Children. His name appeared more than 100 times in the prosecutor's files sent to Sasha.
The first times I heard his name, I must have thought something like, hey, what an asshole.
And it was his claims that started the investigation.
What shocked me the most was that I couldn't understand how people could act like that when they had been there with us. I mean, they saw the people, they saw us, they worked with us and also with other NGOs.
Mi chiamo Gallo Pietro, ho 46 anni.
And that's Pietro Gallo. I reached out to him on WhatsApp, asking if he would be up to chatting in person. I was surprised when he agreed. We meet in a small basement office in Rome. He's a small man with thinning gray hair slicked with gel. He says he's 46 years old, living in Rome. In September 2016, he got hired by a security company to work on the Save the Children rescue ship. He worked there until the 2nd of August 2017. That's the day the Juventa got seized.
The day that Juventa was put under seizure, my name was out on all the Italian media and probably all the international newspapers as well, pointing their finger at me, saying that the reports that led Juventa to seizure came from me and from Lucio Montanino.
Were they right, like pointing at you? Like, was it right that you were the initiator of that report that led to the seizure of the Juventa?
Yes, it was true.
From the beginning, he wants to make it clear. He's not a bad person. He's not a right-wing extremist, as the media has sometimes portrayed him. He wants to prove it, so he opens his laptop. He shows me videos of some of his rescues. He's carrying a baby up an emergency ramp to a cargo ship. In another scene, he's in a red life jacket and a white helmet, helping another rescuer to hoist an unconscious man onto a speedboat. We see him resuscitate the man by mouth, probably saving his life. He says during his time on the Save the Children ship, dubbed the Vozhestia, he was only trying to help. To me, it seems like he agreed to this interview in order to mend his reputation and to explain a crucial event in September 2016. Back then, Gallo had just started working in the Mediterranean. He saw the Juventa during his first few days at sea.
I thought it was a migrant ship, because it was filled with people hanging from every corner. I thought that one was the ship we had to rescue.
Gallo says the Juventa crew was braver than anyone else he'd ever met at sea. Their boat was smaller than the others, but operated closer to the Libyan shore. At the same time, he says, it seemed a bit dodgy. Then, on September 10th, 2016, he observed something that he thought looked suspicious.
And then I saw the rib from my position on the sea. But the rib had already been emptied.
Again, a rib is a rubber speedboat used in the Med by rescue missions like the Juventa.
It was not full. The rescue had been done already. The migrants were all disembarked on Juventa. And this Juventa rib was doing something dodgy with this migrant's rib. Because then I saw another boat like this dragging this empty rib back to the shore.
In his report to the Italian police, Gallo described seeing two men with dark complexions setting off from the Juventa in a rubber dinghy and heading for the Libyan coast. To Gallo, this was the proof that the rescuers on the Juventa were working hand in hand with smugglers. Soon, it's how everyone who disapproved of NGO activities in the Mediterranean would see it too. Sascha has another explanation. He says his crew wanted to transfer the people from the rubber dinghy to the Save the Children ship that Gallo was on. He says his crew towed this dinghy away from the ship so that it wouldn't get in the way. And the people driving the dinghy away, the ones Gallo described as having dark complexions, they weren't smugglers. They were members of the Juventa crew. Sascha also told me that the dinghy did not head towards the Libyan coast, as Gallo claims. It was actually destroyed by the rescuers at a distance from the scene. It was a typical procedure at the time, done to make sure empty boats do not cause confusion among the rescuers. To prove their version of the events, Sascha and his crew turned to a British research group called Forensic Architecture. The group reconstructed the scene with the help of pictures, videos, and location tracking from the boats on the scene that day. The group concluded there was no evidence of collusion or collaboration between the Juventa and any smuggling operations. So how did the Italian judiciary get this so wrong? The trouble started with how Gallo and his colleagues reported. We had no idea who had authority there, Gallo says, because we were 12 miles off the Libyan coast in the middle of the sea. Gallo and his colleagues wondered, who should they tell about a crime you thought you saw in the ocean? Without an obvious prosecutorial office to turn to, back in September 2016, Gallo and his IMI security colleagues sent an email to the Italian Military Intelligence Service. Gallo shows me a copy of the email on his phone. It reads, "The Juventa seems to be a clear objective for smugglers who leave Libya with boats full of migrants. This leads to the assumption that there is complicity between the Juventa ship and the smugglers." But Gallo says they never received a response from the intelligence service. So they turned to people, Gallo says he believed, were genuinely interested in solving the migration problem on the Mediterranean. Italy's opposition parties. They reached out to two parties, the left-leaning protest party Five Star Movement and Lega, the right-wing populist party based in Milan. That's the one that called them back. So Gallo and his colleagues were connected with Lega's leader Matteo Salvini. He, the same man whose inflammatory and racist rhetoric would take over European politics 2 years later. When Gallo and his colleagues reached out, Salvini called back right away with some questions. What were they doing? Where were they going? How long had they been on the ship? Salvini wanted to meet right away, in person. In the meantime, Salvini asked Gallo and his colleagues to send him any information they could get. That's how, over the next few weeks, Gallo became sort of a private spy on the Mediterranean. He took photos of business cards and crew lists. He collected images of crew members and rescued migrants on board. He also transferred videos from the Save the Children GoPro cameras to private hard drives. He shows me some of the files he still has on his computer. Gallo's colleagues forwarded the material to Salvini's intermediary. I reached out to Save the Children about Gallo and IMI Security. The NGO denies any allegations of misconduct and its sole mission is to save lives. Salvini's office wouldn't comment either, but in an interview with an Italian newspaper, he confirmed that he did meet with Gallo's co-worker. He said that she gave him highly interesting information. I asked Gallo what he and his colleagues wanted out of all this. He told me he didn't think the way the EU was handling migration, that is allowing private rescue missions to save drowning migrants in the Mediterranean, was the right way. If I have to go 12 miles off the Libyan coast to rescue people, Gallo says, I risk my life and they risk theirs. And then we watch them getting beaten up, he says. Wouldn't it be easier to just bring them from Libya to Italy? That way, I risk less, they risk less, he says. But instead, what's happening now is a mockery. Still, I wanted to know if that's how he felt. Why did he report all this to Salvini? A politician who had already proved his platform was one built on inflammatory racist xenophobia that only served to make people more afraid of migrants.
Yes, at the time he was saying stop immigration, it is true. But we didn't think that he would have faced the situation this way, like he is doing now. We didn't think someone would leave a ship with 150 people on board in the middle of the sea for a whole day.
Pietro Gallo sees himself as a guy who just wanted to do the right thing, prevent people from dying at sea, but who happened to do the wrong thing. After all, Europe's panic about migration helped Salvini become the Italian Minister of Interior in 2018. When Salvini took office, he had Italy's ports closed to all NGO vessels. NGOs shut down their operations, one by one as a consequence. Salvini publicly boasted about having closed the Mediterranean route. No longer was the EU showing its humanitarian, helpful face. Instead, they were showing one of isolation. It's how Fortress Europe was born. A lot of different factors led up to this moment. But at least some of it can be tied back to Gallo and the claims he made about the Juventa.
They used us and they used Gallo as a vehicle to investigate us, but also others. We learned that a large group of people were being investigated. And these are journalists, for example, but also lawyers and priests.
Basically, Sasha says, anyone with a viewpoint opposite to Fortress Europe. He believes the Italian government prosecutors used Gallo as a means to crack down on the Juventa. Later, they used the Juventa to crack down on all sea rescue missions. Private sea rescue ships and even official EU operations are gone. Aircraft and drones survey the sea instead. In October 2020, Frontex, Europe's border and coast guard agency that operates as pan-European border guards, awarded a contract to Israel Aerospace Industry, an Israeli company that works with the French aviation giant Airbus to deliver a long-range military drone to monitor this EU's external border. All of this is not to rescue people, but to inform the Libyan coast guard of incoming migrants, so they can be pushed back from the borders and kept from European shores.
When we are brought back from the Mediterranean Sea to the detention centers, we are extorted, we are tortured in such a way that we need to pay ransoms. We contact our families back in this poor situation that they are in, of which we are fleeing from. Why is this happening to us? This is the question. We guess we are not humans, I bet.
Since 2016, with the gradual withdrawal of rescue ships, the EU and its member states have deepened their relations with Libya.
That's the Libyan Coast Guard firing warning shots at a Spanish NGO ship, Open Arms, as it tries to come to the aid of migrants 13 miles off Libya's coast.
Just a few weeks before we met, Pietro Gallo saw a news report about a missing boat in which everyone on board was presumed dead. He feels responsible for the situation now and also confesses that, in retrospect, he never actually witnessed an NGO collaborating with traffickers. That was always just a hunch. He pulls out of his pocket a copy of a hate letter he received with crosshairs drawn at the top. In all caps in Italian it reads, shit, shit, shit. 2018, 1,800 people dead. Below that are the names of four people who the author holds responsible for these lost lives. Gallo and Salvini are both listed. A shiny golden bullet was taped to the letter. The original is in the hands of the police investigators in Rome. I have so many questions about Gallo. Is he really just a guy who was used and betrayed by right extremists like Salvini? Does he really regret it all?
They went to save people, and now there is up to 18, 20 years in jail. I mean, there is no justice. If these people are going to be convicted, I don't want to be an Italian citizen.
Gallo didn't think the Juventa crew would actually get charged. But in March 2021, Italian government prosecutors in Trapani pressed charges against 21 activists from 10 different organizations. Among them were four members of the Juventa crew. One of them is Sasha. Officially, he's accused of aiding and abetting unauthorized entry into Italy. The prosecutors argue that the people rescued were never in distress, but that there was an arrangement between the activists and the criminal networks in Libya for the sole purpose of people smuggling. A preliminary hearing is set up for him and the other rescuers in May. If convicted, they face up to 20 years in prison. How does it make him feel? I want to know from Sasha.
Angry. Most of all angry. And it's just incredible how much energy and resources it takes. Not only for me, but also for all the friends and comrades who are supporting us and the lawyers.
Still, Sasha says, this isn't really about him.
We are not the ones who are suffering the most, you know. We are not the ones who are the most at risk. These are the people on the move themselves.
I wanted to know whether after all this, did Sasha have any regrets?
The only thing I regret, that we didn't stay with you at the scene and that we followed the call by the Italian authorities back to Lampedusa.
When I think back to that day on the Sea-Watch mission, I remember feeling so helpless in that chaos. It makes me think there has to be a better way to do all this. There has to be a reality where the EU lives up to its responsibilities and sends its own rescue ships. And volunteers who are just trying to help save lives are no longer accused. It hasn't happened yet. For On Spec, I'm Bartolomeo Slaffert in Rome.
The trials of those featured begin this May. The outcome may dictate the future of refugee activism in Europe. The Spy on the Med was reported by Bart Laffert. It was produced by Moritz Heidegger, who also composed and produced the music. Story editing by Elisa Resnick, Margot Ben, and me, Nadine Gori. Additional reporting by Daniela Sala, and voiceover by Adria Baldi. The song Suka was courtesy of the band Yoko Homo. You can hear more of them on Spotify or on Insta at yokohomo_official. Join us at OnSpec next Sunday. We have an Instagram Live with the team behind The Spy on the Med. It stands to be a fascinating conversation. I very much look forward to seeing you there. You've been listening to OnSpec.